it's Dr. Marissa Lee Naismith here, and I'm so honored to be sharing today's interview round episode with you. Listen, and you will be inspired by amazing healthcare practitioners, voice teachers, and music industry professionals who will share their stories, knowledge, and experiences within their specialized fields to help you live your best life every day. As singers, our whole body is our instrument, and our instrument echoes how we feel physically, mentally, and emotionally. So don't wait any longer. Take charge and optimize your instrument now. Remember that to sing is more than just learning about how to use the voice. It's about a voice and beyond. So without further ado, let's go to today's episode. Do you have problems with falling asleep? Or do you wake up during the night and have trouble falling asleep again? Well, as it turns out, it seems you aren't the only one, because as a society, we are currently in the midst of a sleep deprivation crisis. And this is partially due to a new level of high stress we are experiencing globally. Sleep is something we take for granted, and this lack of sleep has become our new normal. Unfortunately, sleep deprivation and insomnia have tremendous impacts emotionally, physically, and mentally. In this episode, we speak with Alina Winnell from The Sleep Expert, who is a world-renowned sleep and insomnia coach. And she shares with us some of the major reasons why we may not be getting that all-important deep sleep, and that it is possible to train ourselves for better sleep. Alina does some myth-busting, as many of us associate lack of sleep with things such as caffeine intake, eating carbs late at night, and room temperature, and there are many other myths. However, according to Alina, these are not the real causes for our lack of sleep, and there are usually underlying issues such as stress and anxiety levels that are at the root of the sleep problem. Alina believes that everybody has the ability to sleep well, and a common sense approach is far more effective to dealing with sleep problems. In order to solve those sleep disorders, we must tune in and reconnect to ourselves to resolve any underlying issues that are affecting our state of mind and in turn the quality of our sleep. She also shares with us the new and innovative techniques she has developed that have helped thousands of people across the globe reclaim their sleep and transform their lives. There is so much more in this interview with Alina that will help you reignite your relationship with sleep. So without further ado, let's go to today's episode. Welcome to the show, Alina from The Sleep Expert. It's so lovely to have you on here. How are you?
I'm really well, and thanks for having me, Marissa. I'm delighted to be here and to be able to share some information today on sleep with your beautiful audience.
Well, sleep is something we all take for granted, and we really are in the midst of a sleep deprivation crisis.
Now, we are.
And I was so thrilled that you accepted to be on the show, because I think it's beneficial for all of us to learn about sleep. Now, you've been labeled the sleep expert. You coach people on sleep and insomnia, and you've literally helped thousands of people all around the world with their sleep issues. Yes. Now, I'm doing a little bit of a background search. You've had sleep problems yourself. You were chronic insomniac.
That's right.
So tell us about your sleep journey and what led you to where you are right now.
Yeah, it's interesting, Marissa. You know, when I first start working with people who struggle with sleep, they say to me, I feel so much relief just being understood.
Yes.
Because so many people struggle when they've got a sleep problem and people around them don't know what it's like to be sleep deprived, they can feel very isolated and alone. So I guess for me, that's one of the gifts that I do bring to the people I work with, because I have been there myself and I really get it. And sleep deprivation and insomnia have such a huge impact on people's lives. So for me personally, it was many years ago now, my sleep issues were absolutely chronic. And my journey was one of real struggle because I went to so many, you know, so-called experts and professionals to try and get help, and I couldn't find the help that I needed. And I, you know, tried all of these different things that I was advised to do, and I just found that nothing really worked. So I set off on my own journey of trying to heal my sleep and came up with some, I would say, new and innovative techniques to help people. Well, I helped myself first and now I help others. But in the process, the insomnia, it destroyed my personal relationship at the time. It affected all the relationships I had with my family, friends, you know, because I was grumpy and irritable and just not a happy person. I was lethargic all of the time. It affected my career. It affected my finances. Every single aspect of my life was affected. You know, and before that, I was someone who was a high achiever and, you know, go, go, go. And that all kind of came crashing down. You know, it was one of those, I suppose, those stories where now I get to do what I love and help people every day with restoring their ability to sleep well naturally. So in the end, it turned out to be a blessing.
So what actually led to that insomnia? Were you in a high-stress situation?
Yeah, it's going to be different for different people. For me, yes. Yeah, I would say it was a chronic stress at the time. But, you know, I didn't necessarily realize that's what was going on. And I see that a lot in my clients today. And one of the first things that we will often work on is just helping people to understand, because it's like we've got a new level of stress these days that's become normal. And so people, because it's normal, people don't notice it's there. So that can often be an important starting point for people, not for everyone, but for a lot of people, for sure.
Yes. And I know in our in the entertainment industry, there's so many of us, especially the ones who have professional careers, that sleep is a problem. That people, if they do a gig and they're on a high and they have that adrenaline and then they get home, they're still on that high and it's really hard for them to come down. And it does lead to all sorts of problems. But so why do we need sleep? Why does our body and our brain, why do we need that important sleep?
Oh, wow. Sleep is so, so important to our health and well-being. So during the daytime, we're breaking down. We're doing things, we're achieving, and the body and the mind are actually breaking down in some capacity. So it's our nighttime where we heal and we regenerate and we restore. So without that, we are just breaking down, right? Mm-hmm. So during the nighttime, what happens? One important function a lot of people don't realize is we detoxify. So our brain gets cleaned out and detoxifies, and so does our body. It's a very important function that happens at nighttime. That's why when you've had a really good sleep, you wake up in the morning, you feel so good. You've really been cleaned out. And then also in terms of the other functions, so mentally, emotionally, energetically, I would say even spiritually, we heal overnight. So on a physical level, we're detoxifying, we are, our cells and our organs are regenerating, so it's the fountain of youth.
Yes.
On an emotional level, our hormones are being rebalanced. And they've done studies to show that sleep is actually the number one determinant of happiness, not money, sleep. So emotionally, it's very, very important. And obviously, energetically, if we sleep well, we have so much more energy the next day. Yes. So it's on so many different levels, but it's really like in a nutshell, we regenerate and heal overnight.
Yes. I heard somewhere that when we go to sleep, our brain goes into a dishwasher mode. It's like we set the dishwasher at nighttime and then we wake up in the morning and all the dishes are clean. And it's like,
I love that. Yes.
And so while we're sleeping, it's like the dishwasher goes off in our brains and it gets rid of all the debris of all those cells that are in decline. And
that's such a good analogy. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I love that. And that's the only way I can remember it is through talking about it as a dishwasher. So what is the desired amount of sleep? Because I've heard it's like 7 to 9 hours. What would you recommend to your clients? And does it vary from person to person?
So 7 to 9 hours is good, and it will vary a little bit person to person, but it's not just the number of hours, it's the quality of sleep. This is so important because you could get, 8 hours of very light sleep, and that's not going to be as healing or regenerative as 8 hours of sleep where you've got deep sleep and then, REM sleep and the full array of different sleep stages that we need to heal well and regenerate. So if people aren't getting into deep sleep, or if they're sleeping too deeply and not getting enough, dream sleep, then, again, that's not ideal. So it's about the quality of sleep as well.
Yes. So how do we know then, if we're sleeping, how can we gauge the deepness, for lack of a better word, of sleep that we're having, the depth. Yeah. That's the word, the depth of sleep.
Yeah. You will know based on how you feel in the morning, right? So if you are feeling like $1 million in the morning, that's the clearest sign. I would say that's an even better indication than all the fancy apps out there and that kind of thing. But, you'll know because, for example, if it's really hard to wake you up at night, so some people will wake up with the slightest noise, but if you're a deep sleeper, you know that little noises don't wake you up. Mm-hmm. So it's like how easily do you wake, and then also what do you feel like in the morning? Yeah.
Yes. Now, I have a mother-in-law who has real sleep problems, and she said, for as long as I've known her, and that would be 30 years, she's never slept properly. Now, I know she is a highly emotional person, and we were having this discussion between my husband and I last night, and I said, she is very, very emotional. She often finds herself in conflict with other people, and is always stressed. But now what's happening is she's in her mid-70s, her body seems to be breaking down as well. Like some of her organs are not working the way that they're meant to, like her kidneys are now starting to malfunction. She's having tests for her pancreas. And all these little things are starting to happen. Would sleep be a contributor to those problems?
Well, it very well could be. If she hasn't been a good sleeper for that many years, absolutely. She's missed out on a lot of really healing time. And it's the deep phase of sleep where we get the most physical regeneration. Mm-hmm. Different phases of sleep have different healing properties, but the deep sleep heals us physically. So if she hasn't slept well for so long, absolutely, it would have had a huge impact, huge.
I just have to share this though. I was staying with her in a hotel room and I remember just rolling over at about 5 o'clock in the morning, just rolling over casually, my eyes happened to open and there she was with her eyes wide open staring at me. It was so freaky.
Wow. She's awake, right?
She's been awake for hours. Yeah. So at the moment, we do have an epidemic of people who are having problems with sleep. So why, as a society, are we losing the ability to sleep?
It's a good question. So, look, overall as a society, I would say we are quite a stressed society. So if you know anything about the nervous system, there's like two main branches of the autonomic nervous system. One is the sympathetic branch, which is connected to the stress response. The other is the parasympathetic branch, which is connected to the rest and digest functions. Mm-hmm. And today, as a human race, or mainly in the Western world, we're spending an excess amount of time in that sympathetic branch, which is the stress response. So we've got it out of balance today. But again, it's because it's become normal, people don't realize. And so we're very good at doing and achieving and getting things done, but we're not so good or strong at the resting and, you know, digesting. It's no coincidence that digestion's an issue today as well. They both sit on the same branch of the autonomic nervous system that we're weaker in today.
Yeah. So just going back to, say, for example, my mother-in-law, and this may relate to a lot of people, and like she would say, I'm not a good sleeper. So, and to me, I just go, how can you not be, or I'm not good at sleeping? Well, how can you not be good at sleeping when we're all born the same and we all sleep the same? Well, you know, that's something that we do instinctively.
Yeah, you're right. It's a natural function. But having said that, a lot of people have lost the ability to do it well. So we are most of us are born being able to sleep well, and it can deteriorate over time. So if she's a highly strung, stressed, then that will definitely be affecting her ability to sleep well. And then adding the belief on top of that I'm not a good sleeper. So I find it interesting. A lot of people, I meet a lot of people who say, I'm just not a good sleeper. That's just the way it is. And okay, you know, if you choose to resign yourself to that, well, you won't be a good sleeper. But it is within everybody's ability to sleep well. As you say, it's a natural function. So if we remember that, and basically our system is out of balance when we're not sleeping well. It's giving us information. So if you, instead of resigning yourself to, I'm just a poor sleeper, if you actually go, hang on, my body's giving me information here, what is out of balance, and you address that, you can sleep well again, as well as find some things that are fundamentally out of balance in your system, which really would benefit you to address. Does that make
sense? Yes, absolutely. Do you believe that COVID-19 has created a bigger issue or bigger problem that was there before the pandemic in terms of sleep?
Yeah, it's such an interesting one. I find people have kind of gone two different ways. Some people are loving like the extra flexibility they've had working from home and not having the travel time, and they're actually sleeping better. And then there's another group of people who miss their social life and the boundaries that they used to have between work and home and a number of other things, and they're sleeping worse. So it's kind of had depends, but two different types of impacts on people.
Yeah. So, do you find that with your clients, is there a particular industry where you seem to find more people from that kind of work come to you than, say, another occupation?
There are. I'd say it's more that there are patterns that come out depending on the type of industry. So definitely notice that there are certain industries I work more with, because I'd say that there's probably more pressure put on certain industries.
Yes.
But in particular relevance to your audience, I'm sure you have a lot of creatives listening to your.
Yes.
Yeah. So a few common patterns I find with creatives. Often a very common pattern is they like to stay up late because that's their creative time. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's certain things to be addressed around that. What else? They can often, creatives can often be very emotional personalities.
You can say highly strong. I won't be offended.
Well, yeah, interesting. Some of them are highly strung, some just feel a lot. And so it's like, so a couple of things around this is like, so going to bed late, it might be working with, okay, how do we find creative time during the day so you can still get to bed earlier, like really identifying how it serves them to go to bed later and then shifting that, or accepting that's the way it is and just making sure that there's quality sleep, you know, and you allow yourself to go to bed later and get up later if that's the choice you make. So that's one area that can often come up with creatives. The emotions, it would be, sometimes it can be around like working with people so that the emotions don't bleed out and affect everything.
Yes.
Rather than keep contained to what's actually going on at the time, because our emotions absolutely affect our sleep. Mm. You've got to remember emotions are energy in the body. And so our energy patterns will affect how we sleep. So there are a couple of particular areas for creatives.
And what about demographic and gender? Do you find there's a certain age group or more men or women that come to you?
Generally speaking, there'd be a few more, like probably around 2/3 women, 1/3 men.
Wow.
And that is reflected in statistics as well. Women don't actually sleep as well as men do. At least that's what the statistics say.
Yeah. I was going to say that perhaps men may not seek help the way that women do, because men are not very good at going to the doctor, et cetera.
Yeah,
or look at a lot of things as mamby-pamby.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Mm. I definitely think that plays a part. In terms of ages, look, sleep affects all ages. So the majority of my clients would be between 30 and 50. Mm-hmm. But it affects people of all ages. Women, so as a generalization, so this isn't true for all men, women tend to struggle more with falling asleep. Men struggle more with waking up during the night. Mm. So it's, some of those patterns are interesting as well.
Wow. Yeah. So let's go into some myth busting before we go into some of the problems. Like we're going to dig deeper regarding the problems associated with lack of sleep. But there's so many myths, and I don't know what's a myth and what's a truth. So, for example, caffeine before bed. What's the general rule of thumb around that?
So anything that is going to stimulate your system, it's helpful to sort of avoid that in the lead up to bedtime. But I just want to say this is it's more a symptom of what's going on rather than the cause.
Ah.
So the biggest myth that I find around sleep is that it's that hour or two before bed affects the ease and quality of your sleep. And whilst it does play a part, it is a very small part. So it's our entire day that affects the quality of our sleep. So, yeah, sure, you can cut out coffee or reduce coffee, and that's definitely important, but it's just one, I would say, often small factor relative to the bigger picture. So if someone is drinking a lot of coffee, usually there's someone who pushes themselves, who's trying to achieve a lot, who's working on stimulating their system. So there's a whole range of things that that, you know, maybe there are some beliefs that need to be changed, or maybe the person needs to look at working on being more than doing all of the time.
Yes, that makes sense. Because if someone's wanting more caffeine and they believe that they need that energy, they must be pushing beyond their natural energy levels.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, I never thought of it that way. So it's like a personality type or a characteristic or a situation.
Exactly. And in our society, cultural as well, because there's an emphasis on doing and achieving in our culture and, you know, pushing yourself.
Yeah.
A lot of my clients, their to-do lists are so long and it's like, whoa.
Welcome to my world.
When do you get some time out to just be and relax?
Well, I've found the only way to do that is to schedule it in your planner and in your diary, is to block out time for exercise or for a walk or whatever it is, because otherwise it doesn't happen. You have to really schedule it, don't you? And then there's a situation of food. People say that if you have carbohydrates before bed, and some people when they wake up in the middle of the night go and hit the fridge thinking that that's going to help them sleep. So what's the association then with food and sleep?
Ooh, yeah. So first of all, I would say in an ideal world, but we don't live in an ideal world, but in an ideal world, you want to avoid food a couple of hours before bed, and especially liquids, so you don't need to get up and go to the bathroom at nighttime. Food can often be an emotional comfort for people. It can help people have a dopamine rush or you know, help people feel good, which helps them to get back to sleep. So, again, it's symptomatic of other things going on. So I would encourage people to actually look at, you know, why are they needing to eat so close to bed, and are there some things that could be changed around that?
Sure,
carbohydrates can help, but they should not be necessary to be able to sleep well.
Yeah.
So there's something missing if that's necessary to have a good sleep.
Yeah. And like for me, my thing that gives me a bad night's sleep is alcohol. So, for example, if I have more than what I would usually have, I only drink a couple of nights a week. But just say if I'm having a good time and I have a glass or two more than what I would usually have because celebrating or whatever, I go into a deep sleep the first 4 hours. Then from that point on, I'm in and out of sleep. So I have that really deep sleep, and then I go into this like dozing for the next 4 hours.
Yeah.
Has there been any research around that, or is that a thing?
Yeah, basically alcohol changes out what we call sleep architecture. So the sleep cycle is different, so it takes us away from what the ideal sleep architecture is. Often it will help people fall asleep, but it's not ideal really for a good night's sleep.
I mean, I can have a stomach full of carbohydrates, you know, that wouldn't worry me, but the alcohol is the thing that really disturbs my sleep. Then I hear like some people say that they sleep better with the room temperature at a certain, there is an actual like temperature. And I know, say for me once again, in winter when it's cooler and I'm under the blankets, I sleep so much better than say in summer when I'm sleeping on top of the blankets.
So, I mean, we do sleep better when we're in a cooler temperature. So I think it's around 15.5 to around 19.5 degrees Celsius is the ideal kind of range. But also it's partly because the more relaxed we are, the cooler we are. So it's chicken or egg, right? So it's like, you know, if you've done a really deep meditation, do you notice how you get cold? Have you ever noticed that? It's because when we relax, our body temperature drops. So, and when we're stressed, our body temperature rises. So it's chicken or egg. You can help yourself relax by cooling yourself. That can actually happen. It starts to switch on the parasympathetic nervous system. So cooler temperatures definitely help with better sleep for the majority of people, not everyone. So definitely making an effort to have a relatively cool bedroom can help. But I also encourage people not to get too fixated on the physical side of things, because if there's one thing If I had to pick just one thing, I don't like to pick one thing, yes. But if I had to pick one thing that affects our sleep more than anything else, it is our nervous system. So it's like I really, really want to encourage people to start to become aware of what's happening in the nervous system. Are they in a stress response or a relaxation response? So in other words, are you contracting and tight and tense in a state of stress, or are you expanded, open, relaxed? You know, it's like start to watch that during the day.
Right.
Because the more imbalanced that is, the better people will sleep.
Yeah.
Then you won't have to so much work on the room temperature. You're doing it internally.
I love this because it's kind of myth-busting all the things that I thought. So what you're saying is these things will kind of be irrelevant if we're in that kind of more relaxed mode, that, as you call it, that expanded mode, then it doesn't matter so much.
Exactly.
Wow. So people can't blame all this. So if you're not a good sleeper, don't blame it on external factors.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay. One last thing, and then you can tell me what myths you've heard. But what about devices and the phone? So people who are on their devices right up until they go to bed, or they sleep with the phone beside their bed and all those notifications are going off during the night, does that impact on sleep? Because I'm just thinking about the dopamine and, you know, those levels. People wake up in the night and the first thing they do is they just look at their phone thinking that's going to put them back to sleep.
Yeah, such a good question. And it's like anything where we can use it to help us or we can use it in a way that negatively impacts us. So if you use your phone or your device to, for example, listen to a relaxation or play some calming music, then great, it's going to help you. But if you're using it in a way that, you know, gets you wound up and you're flicking through posts and your brain's starting to move really fast, that's not going to help your sleep. And definitely if the volume is on at night, yeah. So I really would encourage people to move it away from them, have it ideally off, otherwise in airplane mode, and only use it for purposes in the bedroom that are relaxing, not stimulating. Absolutely.
Mm, yeah. And go and buy an old-fashioned alarm clock.
Yes. It's so true. Yeah, because then you can actually turn your phone off. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Or even better, wake up without an alarm.
Oh, well, that's fair because I pretty much do.
Yeah.
Very rarely does the alarm go off that I'm not already awake. Because I try to go to bed at the same time and wake up pretty much at the same time. Because if I have a late night and a sleep in, I find it throws my sleep for the next day. Whereas if I have a routine, that's my thing. But I wouldn't say highly strung, but I am a little wired, goes with the territory.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I have my thing where I eat maybe 3 hours before bed. I try and disconnect from all my devices 2 hours before bed and go, and I have an alarm that goes off an hour before bedtime to remind me it's an hour before bed. So I have like a ritual around all this stuff. But that works for me, you know.
Yeah.
And I can't even watch, you'll laugh at this, I can't even watch a detective show, a murder mystery, anything with blood and guts. I have to watch shows like The Real Housewives that are so boring and so insignificant and so do not stimulate my mind. They put me to sleep. So I have a good night's sleep by watching that rubbish.
Yeah. This is another interesting sleep myth. And I love that you brought that up, Marissa. So a lot of people are told don't watch television before bed. And it's just... To me, this is not true. I absolutely agree with you that watching something, if people want to watch TV, then as long as they're watching something that is relaxing or a bit boring or something like a nice drama or romance, then that's fine because it kind of helps switch the mind off and gets you into a relaxed state. But if someone's watching something adrenaline producing like a murder mystery or something violent, that's not going to put you into really keep you awake or give you bad dreams. So, again, it's like, how we use our technology, it's what are you watching rather than don't watch TV, you know?
Yes. So, a show that I was really loving was Outlander.
Oh, yes.
Loved it. But I could, oh my gosh, let's not get me started. Loved it.
Jamie.
Oh, Jamie. But I couldn't.
That'll give you good dreams, won't it?
No, it actually was giving me night. I couldn't go to sleep after watching that, even because there was so much suspense and drama. There was never an episode where the whole episode was something nice. There was always something bad, and so I'd sit there waiting for whatever it was that was bad to happen. So I would go to bed really wired, so I couldn't even watch that before bed. That's how bad I am. But I own it. I own it. It's okay. I get. Yeah, it's that stress level with me.
And that's exactly it, Marissa. It's like you own it. So you're aware of the effect it has on you. And then and that's one of the things that's so important with sleep is for people to attune to themselves so they know what works for them and what doesn't. Yeah.
So let's unpack now some of those problems associated with lack of sleep. So I'd like to go into the physical, the mental, the emotional. You talk about the spiritual as well. So what happens in terms of the physical? What are some of the things that can go wrong with our bodies if we don't sleep properly?
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, so it comes back to the general principle before of breaking down. So on a physical level, we are not healing, so our organs aren't healing like they need to. Our muscles, our bones, our brain, it's not getting the regeneration it needs. Mm-hmm. So on a physical level, that can cause anything for, you know, like muscle atrophy or if you have a good workout at the gym and you're not sleeping well, your muscles won't have the time to recover and regenerate, which is what you actually go to the gym for.
Yes.
It'll affect your digestion. It will affect the function of your organs. If you have an illness, you won't get the time to physically repair overnight. It like quite literally impacts everything. So that's on a physical level.
In terms of the physical level then, can we liken it to a car? So a car can keep going, like it can go and go and go, but eventually the motor is going to just conk out because it's just not going to make it anymore.
Absolutely, exactly. So it's like driving a car and your foot's on the accelerator and that's it. As opposed to sleep is like when you take it to the mechanic, you get your service, you fill up with petrol, you know, all of those necessary things, give the car a clean, of those.
Yes. Yeah. And so even when it comes to sleep then, like if people don't sleep properly, are they at higher risk of injuring themselves, like having a workplace accident or a road accident?
So this is on the mental level. Some of the things that are really affected, so our memory is affected. Because overnight, that's when things are moved into our memory. It's like the filing occurs during our sleep. So our memory is affected. So if people don't, their memory is poor, it can be because of poor sleep. Our concentration is affected. It can be very difficult for people to concentrate the next day, and also our response times are affected. So exactly what you've said, that can cause accidents at work. It can cause accidents on the road. It actually is a huge contributor to to car accidents and OH&S issues. So
yeah,
absolutely.
And I like the fact that you talked about, without using the word intelligent, but I did read somewhere that it impacts on our intelligence. That it was proven in 50 years of sleep research that people who sleep better, have more like a better quality sleep, are far more intelligent than those who aren't. So I apologize in advance if someone is a bad sleeper. I'm not calling you dumb.
It's a really interesting point, Marissa. So one of the things that happens when we sleep is the left and the right hemispheres of the brain integrate. So I would say it's more about our capacity to use our whole brain rather than half of our brain. Mm-hmm. So people are usually dominant in one hemisphere. Creatives often are more right-brained, analytical type people more left-brained. So the more good quality sleep we get, that's the time when our brain crosses over and really integrates. So from that perspective, yes, we are more intelligent if we sleep better.
Yes. Absolutely. And interestingly enough, this research affirms what you just said, and because it was across all industries, it wasn't just necessarily people who were in a specific job, it was people across all occupations, so both sides of the brain.
Interesting, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, now the emotional. And I can tell you from my perspective, and this is a little incident that I'll use because it's a funny thing. My daughter is a dancer and she was dancing at a Stedford, and I had to fully sequin a full length unitard for her. And it was individual sequining, and I was supposed to have help. That person bailed on me and I was left to do this, and I literally had all night to get it done. And I ended up staying up till 5 in the morning sequining. I had to be up at 6. So I took my daughter. I did a hair and a makeup. She was only like about 10 at the time. We get to this at Stedford. Someone just, who I knew, just asked me how I was. And I burst into tears uncontrollably without even, like, it was just a response that I had no control over. And and it's happened to me that if I don't sleep well or go into a deep sleep, or if I'm sleep deprived, I am a mess. Like, I cry at the drop of a hat. Yeah. Is that a thing, or is that just me?
It is a thing, yeah, because we heal not only physically and mentally overnight, but emotionally. So one of the roles of our dreams is to help us figure things out emotionally, right? Mm. So if we're not getting enough sleep, we don't get that emotional healing overnight. So from that perspective, yes, we will be more emotional. And also it affects our hormone production and how imbalanced our hormones are. So overnight we regenerate and heal on a hormonal level as well, which means that we wake up with more serotonin in our system and more of the happy feel-good hormones. Mm-hmm. So if you haven't slept well, there will be less of those, which will mean we'll be grumpier, we'll be more irritable. There's a lot of things that affect how we interact with others that will be affected. Yeah.
Yes. That probably explains the relationship with my mother-in-law.
No. Yes. Yes, well, Marissa, absolutely.
I hope she doesn't listen to this one. And if you know my mother-in-law, don't tell her. Now, what about depression and anxiety and the correlation with sleep, lack of sleep?
Yeah. So it's, again, it's one of those things, it's chicken or egg, because sleep affects depression and anxiety, and depression and anxiety affect sleep. Mm-hmm. So I always suggest to people, you know, tackle it on both ends, you know, work on the sleep as well as work on the depression or anxiety, or both. So what I tend to find, well, definitely in my practice, I get more people that struggle with anxiety whose sleep is affected than depression. Even though both anxiety and sleep, anxiety and depression affect sleep, often anxiety will prevent sleep, whereas depression will often cause too much sleep. It's like people don't want to get out of bed, you know. Ooh. It's like, yeah. So with anxiety, it essentially is the flight response, right? So, you know, you've got your fight and flight response.
Yes.
So someone is anxious, they're in that fight or flight response. Now, it's very difficult to fall asleep if we don't feel safe. So if we're in fight or flight, we don't feel safe. It's our survival response to not go unconscious, because we've got signals in our system that we're not okay, we're not safe. So, of course, we won't fall asleep. We're less likely to. And that's meant to help us. But when it's happening long term, obviously it's detrimental.
Yeah. This makes so much sense. Mm. This is amazing. Thank you. Definitely. Now, can we train ourselves for better sleep?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, we can.
Yes.
You can ask me how.
Okay, yes. I want to know. Because there are the conventional methods that you can go to your GP and they can prescribe you with sleeping pills. And I did have a time where I was having going through a personal tragedy, and I was prescribed sleeping pills, and I would only take a quarter of a pill. I'm only a small person.
Yeah.
And I would take a quarter of a sleeping pill, and I was knocked out for 24 hours, just about. Like, I could not. So they were no good for me.
Mm.
So, like, I don't agree with them, but I would not tell someone that who's been prescribed by their GP to take them. So what are the things that we can do? If we come to you, how can you help us?
Mm-hmm. So I take a very holistic approach to sleep, and you would have heard me speak multiple times in the conversation today about mental, physical, emotional, energetic. So to me, it's important to look on all of those different levels to really help us get good sleep. And just on the sleeping tablet thing, before we move on, it is creating like a fake type of sleep. So even though, you know, if your doctor prescribes them and in the short term they may help some people, but longer term it's not helpful for people to sustain that. So looking for a natural solution, I would encourage. And so when we were talking about sleep myths before, so when people read the information out there in the media, it's usually focusing on those physical elements, you know, cut out coffee, go to bed at the same, habits, go to bed at the same time every night. Yeah.
Absolutely.
But for people who are really struggling with sleep, it's just not enough. It's very simplistic, that advice. So there's more to do. So I would say, like I mentioned before, number one thing is really working on the nervous system to bring the nervous system into balance. Now, what affects our nervous system? So the way that we think and the way that we feel will be two of the biggest things that affect our nervous system. So let me give you some examples. So a lot of my clients will catastrophize, like, think about the future and all of the things that may go wrong in the future.
Yes.
Now, of course, what that does is it creates stress hormones in the body to be able to deal with that threat, which doesn't actually exist in the present moment. It's a perceived threat, right? Mm-hmm. So that's an example of how our thinking patterns can affect our nervous system and hence our sleep. The way that we feel will affect our sleep. So if someone is, what's an example? So you mentioned before, loss. So let's say, for example, someone's grieving the loss of a loved one or a pet or something like that. Then what's important is to move the energy through the system so it's not, you know, in our society we are taught to suppress so much.
Yes.
And it's really to allow the emotion to move so, again, the nervous system comes back into balance, because if it's stuck energy in the system, it's no longer emotion, energy in motion, but rather stagnant energy, we don't sleep as well. So it's because it affects our nervous system. So the way we think and the way we feel will affect our nervous system, which affects our sleep. So actually, something that might be of interest to the people listening right now, your audience, if they believe this is not necessarily relevant to them, I'd like to invite them to do a little test.
Okay, cool. I'd like a test.
Yes, great. All right. Place a hand on the upper chest and on the belly. Any hand, it's fine. It's really just to notice where you're breathing into. So I invite everyone to just take a moment and just notice, are you breathing more into your upper chest or are you breathing more into your belly? And don't control the breath. Just allow it to do what it was naturally doing before. Mm-hmm. Or are you holding your breath? A lot of people do.
I do that. I notice that when I'm feeling a little uptight, I am holding. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So if people are noticing now that they're breathing shallowly, high and fast in the upper chest area, that's usually a sign of stress or anxiety. If they're breathing into the belly area, then great. Okay, that's more relaxation. If they're holding their breath, that's more like the freeze response. And that's, I hate to say this, Marissa, but probably the more extreme of the responses.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And a lot of my clients are breath holders, or shallow breathers, and so these are signs of what's happening in our nervous system. So I'm not saying that is the cause of poor sleep, but it's an indication of what's happening in the nervous system, which affects our sleep. So you can also check it. So that's one little test. Another is to check in with your muscle tension.
The shoulders are up around the ears. Yes.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm. Or are the muscles relaxed and soft? Mm. So that's another way you can kind of get an idea of what's going on for you.
Yeah. These things are habitual. And what I do is I set alarm triggers during the day to check in. So every couple of hours, and it drives everyone absolutely insane that's around me, an alarm goes off and I just do like a little check-in of, okay, how's my body feeling right now? That's just my thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it's become really important to me. I like to try and improve the quality of life. I want to have good quality of life in every area if possible.
So my question for you, Marissa, would be what kind of alarm do you have go off?
Oh, it's just a phone alarm.
Yeah.
It's so the one I wake up to in the morning.
So here's an offering. It's just if you are going to set an alarm, to do one that's gentle and soft and soothing so that you're not startled.
Sorry, that's so funny because mine startles everybody. It is not calm and soothing. It's like a fire alarm almost. Okay, I'm going to try that. Thank you.
Yeah, you can actually set change the settings so that you can have a song or something that is your so-called alarm. But just that word alarm, it's alarming, right? And so we're putting ourselves into the stress response with an alarm. So for me, I don't wake up with an alarm, but I do put one on just like at the latest possible time, just in case I happen to oversleep. And that so-called alarm is just a beautiful, slow, relaxing song that gradually gets louder so that I'm not startled awake, but rather I just gradually come out of my beautiful slumber.
Yes.
Right? Otherwise, there's stress hormones that just suddenly flood the system, and ideally we don't want that.
Yes, and I've heard that snooze button with that alarm is really bad. Like it's a terrible way to start the day, is to constantly go snooze, snooze, snooze. So that alarm is going off every, I don't know, 10 minutes?
Yeah. Imagine all the surges of hormones, stress hormones. The alarm goes off. Yeah.
We don't need any more of those. We have enough.
Well, and exactly, that's right. Yeah. And if someone's snoozing that many times, they're probably not getting enough sleep, because otherwise, why do you need to snooze? So there's another issue going on there. Yeah.
Yes. I love how you keep bringing it back to there's something else going on there. So we've been basically, all the information we've been fed is on such a superficial level.
Such a superficial level. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So what are some of the things that you do with your clients? What are some of the therapies that you use with your clients to help them with their sleep issues?
Yeah. So if there's anyone out there listening who has tried lots of different things and nothing has worked, I hear this from person after person, I really want to reassure them that it is possible for anybody to sleep well again. And people, when they've tried so many different things, often start to think, oh, there's no hope, but there is. Mm-hmm. So some of the things I work with, just to help people get an idea of really what we need to look at to get a better night's sleep, I will be looking at the nervous system, like I've mentioned many times. Yes. Brain waves. So brain waves, we during the day when we're concentrating and we're active, we're usually in what we call beta, which is a fast brainwave state. When we're in deep sleep, where we're getting really high levels of healing, we're in a really slow brainwave state called delta. So often people's brains have forgotten how to shift from the fast brainwave state to the slow one. So we do work with how to slow the brainwaves down and the ability to move easily between those states, so that deep sleep can be achieved. And sometimes it's necessary to learn that during the day when you're conscious, so that you can do it when you're unconscious at nighttime, because you can't control what's going on when we're unconscious. Sleep mindset is really important. So like you said, with your mother-in-law, she has this belief that she's just a poor sleeper. Well, okay, so if you believe that, then you're never actually going to be able to work on your sleep. So shifting our how we prioritize sleep and the beliefs that we have around sleep are really important as well. Like I mentioned, a lot of my clients, that like their to-do lists are so long. It's like, hang on, are you prioritizing sleep? So sleep mindset. You know, something else that's really important as well is to have a good sleep technique, so that, look, even the best sleepers will have a night where they don't sleep that well.
Yes.
And to have a technique ready to use can be really helpful, rather than just lying in bed thinking about all your problems. So, you know, people don't realize the mind is just running and running and running, and whatever thoughts we're having will be affecting the chemistry that's produced in our body. So having a good, and I really encourage body-based techniques like slowing your breathing down, really taking your awareness and presence into your body, relaxing your body. So having some good techniques ready can be helpful. What are some other things? Being able to effectively work with your emotions is important, so that you're not going to bed overly charged. So people who have high anxiety levels or high emotional states that haven't been released from the body, it's like going to bed with your mobile phone when it's fully charged, right?
Yes.
If you try and plug it in and it's fully charged, it's not going to charge anymore. You need it to be depleted so that it will charge again, right? So if we have excess energy levels in the body because we haven't released emotional states or emotions, then we can't discharge and then get the sleep we need to then recharge. So we want this constant charge, discharge, charge, discharge. And you can't do that if you're constantly charged.
Yes.
So, working on our emotional states is important as well. Anyway, I've given you lots of different ideas.
Yes.
Sort of general categories that are important to work with for sleep. In terms of a few practical tips to give your listeners that they can start to work on straight away, I would encourage people to firstly start to notice what they're thinking about. You have no idea how much this affects sleep, right?
Yes.
So are you thinking, and I'm just going to put this into broad categories, but are you having negative or positive thoughts?
Yes.
So if you're thinking about what might go wrong, or, you know, what some bad thing that someone might be thinking about you, well, that's going to be creating stress hormones in the body. And then when you go to bed at night, your stress hormone levels are going to be elevated. And if you're thinking about these things when you're in bed, then that's even worse. So watch your thoughts during the day, not just at night, but during the day. Watch how you feel in your body. What's your nervous system doing? Are you breathing high and fast, or are you breathing nice, relaxed from the belly area? Are your muscles tight and tense, or are they nice and relaxed? Is your posture open and relaxed, or is it, you know, curved over and tight? Observing these kinds of things will help us to attune to what's going on in our nervous system and help us to know how to bring our nervous system more into balance. So if you notice you're breathing high and fast a lot, take a few moments during the day to just take some nice, big, deep belly breaths, relax your muscles, open your posture, put a smile on your face. You know, like, even if we're not having positive thoughts, this putting a smile will start to shift the way that we're thinking. And you can do that in bed as well. I always say to people, you want to do something that passes the smile test in bed. So if you're thinking thoughts in bed, you want to ensure that they're thoughts that put a smile on your face, not thoughts that are creating tension in your body. So that's a little trick people can use. So there are a couple of things people can start to
Fantastic.
Work on.
Fantastic. Yes.
Yeah.
And do you use hypnotherapy on? Yeah, because you have a few different. I see that you do meta coaching, NLP, sound healing, brain wave entrainment, brain mapping. I mean, that's a lot of different techniques. I don't know, other than hypnotherapy, I don't know what any of them are. Do you use one at a time, or do you use things in combination?
So it will depend on what's going on for the person. Some people kind of need certain things more than other, certain modalities more than others. Hypnosis really comes from the word sleep in Greek. It's always the Greeks.
The father from my big fat Greek wedding, he was right.
The Greeks sleep very well. They're so relaxed, you know. Hypnosis is effectively getting us into a slower brainwave state, which is what we're in when we sleep. So when someone's really wired, then hypnosis can help to train the brain to slow down. So with all those different things I've studied, you're right, there's lots of different things, but it's really because, in my experience, a holistic approach to sleep is needed. Mm. You can't just cut out coffee and expect to drink to sleep well. You can't just go to bed at the same time every night and expect to sleep well. It's like really looking at multiple different aspects of our well-being that will allow us to sleep well.
Once again, it always comes back to holistic. You can't separate the brain, the mind, the body, the emotions, the spiritual. It's everything, isn't it?
It absolutely is. Yeah, it is. And that's one of the first things that often I will work with people through. Like, say for example, a lot of my clients are very much in their head. Not all of them, but a lot of them. Mm. So one of the first things we'll do is help remind them that they've got a body, to reconnect to the body, to start to notice how their thinking affects their body and their nervous system. And really start to understand that mind-body connection. And for a lot of people, it's like, so revealing, you know, because we can forget. We're so trained to be in our head in our society these days. But you're absolutely right, Marissa. It is holistic, and it's like understanding how our whole system works together.
Yes.
To allow sleep well.
And from what you've just said, it's also finding that balance.
Yeah.
It's exactly. Balance and that what happens in the mind is going to affect the body, and what happens in the body is going to affect the mind and the emotions. Everything is linked together, so you can't just work on one aspect. Everything has to be looked at.
Exactly. That's right.
And it's honestly, everything that you've said is just, I mean, it's common sense. And I love how you've spoken about it, because you've made it so easy for us all to understand. I really appreciate that.
Okay.
Yeah. So only a couple more questions left.
Yeah.
What's the worst case of chronic insomnia that you've ever come across?
Marissa, I still haven't met anyone who had worse insomnia than I did. So I couldn't sleep naturally for years. It was so bad. And now I sleep so deeply. And I want to share that, because if there are people out there who are struggling, I really want to say you can restore your ability to sleep well naturally. I never thought that I would get the sleep back that I have today. Mm. And like, I get such deep sleep. It's incredible. And I just, to have been someone who literally could not fall asleep to now getting, I would say, have a very high proportion of deep sleep during the night, which is very healing and regenerative. Yes. To go from that to that if I can do that, then anyone can do it. And so I just say, never lose hope. It's possible for anyone. But also, you know, and reach out and get help, because we're not experts in everything, you know. It's a much less painful process when you can find not just help, but effective help. Effective help. There's also a lot of help out there that's not very helpful, but really find someone who can help you, you know.
Yes.
And if you start working with someone that's not really helping, then find someone else.
Yes, I love that advice. So I would take from that, don't go and see someone who's going to tell you simply to stop drinking coffee, stop eating carbs, stop worrying about room temperature.
Yeah.
All the superficial things, and who prescribes you sleeping tablets for the long term.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Spot on. Yes. Yeah. You want to know, you quiz them and you make sure that they've got a more in-depth knowledge than those superficial things, because if they're relying on those superficial things, then and you've got, you know, reasonable sleep issues, and it's just not going to be enough. So absolutely.
So if you had to offer one piece of advice, and I think we just may have had it there about seeking help, but if you had to offer one piece of practical advice to anybody who is having issues with sleep, even if it's an every night occurrence or occasionally, what would that advice be?
I'm going to say something a little bit different now. So
I like that already.
So I did say seek help, but also attune to yourself. Really start to listen to yourself. Re-empower yourself. You know, in our world today, we've got apps, we listen to external authorities, all of that. We're losing touch with ourselves.
Yes.
And sleep, the process of sleep, you know, the daytime we're in the external world. Sleep is when we come back to the internal world. So build that connection to your internal world again. Attune to you. Listen to the signals your body is sending you. Listen to you. So, and listen to you over and above anyone else. because it's, yes. You know, if we're listening to people outside of us, we disempower ourselves and it starts to send our nervous system out of balance. So re-empower yourself, truly attune and listen to what's going on for you.
Yes. I really resonate with that, Alina. This might sound a little woo-woo, but I know, like, I haven't had pain relief for years, not a Panadol, nothing for years, wow. Right? Because I've got to a point where I'm so in tune with my body, I can find the trigger point of where that headache, for example, is coming from. That's and amazing. Literally knock it on the head. And people laugh at me, but isn't it powerful when you are so in tune with your body and your mind that we can empower ourselves, we can heal ourselves, but you have to use your intuition and you have to listen to your body. Absolutely. Because your body will give you those answers.
We have such an intelligent design and we forget.
Yes.
And all we need to do is remember that and attune to it. So, yeah, absolutely. I love that.
Well, look, I just want to thank you so much. This has been brilliant. I appreciate all the information that you've shared with us and I'm sure the listeners are going to love it. I know there's a lot of people in our voice community that are not good sleepers because And they may say, well, how do you know? And that's because I receive emails from them at 3 o'clock in the morning. So they are not good sleepers. Why aren't you in bed asleep at that time? I wake up in the morning and there's an email that was sent in the middle of the night and I'm thinking, my gosh, why aren't you in bed? But anyway, we're going to share where people can find you. We're going to share your website. So if people want to reach out to you, they can. But I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. You've been brilliant. You've been a great sport and you've really shared some fantastic information with us. Thank you.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Look, I'm really on a mission to help people to sleep well. I believe that if we sleep well and we heal and we regenerate during the nighttime when we're unconscious, then we can bring forth our most beautiful gifts to this planet during the day. And so if I can help empower people to do that, then, you know, that's my contribution on this planet. So
you're doing a great job. I love your work. Okay, well, I'm not going to keep you any longer. You've been very generous with your time already. Now you go and have a good night's sleep tonight.
I will.
And I'm sure that you'll be receiving some emails probably from some of the listeners.
I would love that. Yeah.
Yes, well, take it easy. Thank you so much, Alina.
Hope you enjoyed this episode of A Voice and Beyond. Now is an important time for all of us to spread positivity and empowerment in our singing voice community. It's time for you to invest in your own self-care, personal growth, and education. Use every day as an opportunity to learn and to grow so you can show up for your students feeling energized, empowered, and ready to deliver your best. Be the best role model and mentor you can possibly be and watch your students thrive as you do. Thank you so much for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please make sure to share it with a friend or a colleague who you think will be inspired by this. Copy and paste the link and share it with the people you think will enjoy listening to this show. Please share it on social media and use the hashtag #AVoiceAndBeyond. If you would like to help me, please rate and review this podcast and cheer me on by clicking the subscribe button on Apple Podcasts right now. I would love to know what it is you enjoyed the most about this episode and what was the biggest takeaway for you. I promise you there are many episodes to follow, as I'm committed to bringing you more inspiration and conversations just like this one. I'd like to finish up with my final thoughts. Remember that to sing is more than just learning how to use a voice. As singers, our whole body is the instrument, and our bodies echo what we feel physically, mentally, and emotionally. So singing is not just about the voice. It's about a voice and beyond. Please take care of yourself, and I look forward to your company next time.